Soybean isoflavones are a marketable seed quality trait. I'm not going to go into the pros and cons of the health benefits. I think that argument may still be going on. Past research has shown that there is cultivar variability for isoflavone concentration. It's moderately to highly heritable in some studies. All studies have found a large variability across years and a year-by-cultivar interaction. Tsukamoto and his associates in 95 showed that high temperatures during seed filling resulted in lower isoflavone concentration, and many others have agreed with their results. Hoke in 2000 and his associates concluded that the significant yearly variability in temperature made it difficult to predict isoflavone concentration with any certainty. So with that as background, our objectives were to examine the influence of plant breeding and selection on isoflavone concentration, and to characterize the effect of seasonal changes in temperature on isoflavone concentration, and finally, to see if we could develop a predictive model describing the changes in isoflavone concentration with the environment. To handle the first part of our objectives, we took 14 short season cultivars representing 58 years of plant breeding history. These cultivars went all the way back to the 30s. We had two for each decade up until the 90s. They were all grown in a four replication RCBD yield trial from 1993 to 2004, so that was 12 years. They're always grown at Ottawa. We use the same agronomics, same soil type, and that meant we had 672 samples at the end of the 12 years. Every year we collected data on yield, quality, agronomy, phenology, climate, and we also collected a seed sample that was stored at 4 degrees C until we began analysis on this. The samples were dried, ground, and they were analyzed on an NIR reflectance spectrophotometer. And we also used chemical means to verify the NIR equation. The NIR equations were developed in Harrow for isoflavone concentration. We used the HPLC method to verify our NIR equations. The isoflavones were pooled and we're expressing them on the A glycone basis. So all the daidzines were pooled and we're calling that daidzine, the genistein, and same for the genistein, and the total isoflavones were a combination of daidzine, genistein, and glycine. This is a comparison of the HPLC determination and the NIR determination for the isoflavone concentration. So the HPLC is down here, and the NIR is on this axis. And this is for daidzine, genistein, and total isoflavones. The NIR equation for glycine has yet to be perfected, and I think that's probably because glycine is about 10% the value of either daidzine or genistein, so it's very small in concentration. The R-squares are fairly acceptable for our purposes, and we're looking at the environmental influence and the genetic influence in this test, and we use the same criteria and the same equations for all the years, so it was adequate for our purposes. We weren't trying to determine absolute values of these isoflavones. This is year of cultivar release and isoflavone concentration. Remember, we had cultivars going back from the 30s, 40s, and so on, all the way up to the 90s. And this is daidzine, genistein, and their product total isoflavone concentration here. We can see that daidzine increased by about 1% per year over this 58 years, genistein by 1.4% per year, and total isoflavones by about 9% per year. This is in the 14 cultivars that we have sampled from our short season varieties. Yield at that time was going up by 0.4% per year. So that leads us to believe that over time plant breeders have been selecting for higher yield and indirectly selecting for isoflavone concentration. Well, now it's time for some WAG, WAG stands for wild-ass guesses. Isoflavones in the roots are associated with nitrogen fixation. We know that. Cultivars with more isoflavones in the roots may have more successful nitrogen fixation in our cool soils and therefore may have higher yields. Isoflavones have antimicrobial effects and they're the precursors of phytoalexins. We know that. And cultivars with greater disease resistance should have higher yield. So we can imagine that just by breeding for higher yields, isoflavones have been assisting in that yield increase over time. This is the second objective and the method for our second objective. So we had all those isoflavone concentrations from the 12 years. We then merged that database with the agronomy database, the daily weather database, and the phenology database to make one big database. And to look at the influence of maximum and minimum temperature on isoflavone concentration, we developed the heat stress day and cold stress day concept. So the heat stress day, this is just like a growing degree day. A heat stress day is the sum over a growth stage interval, in this case R5 to R7, of the daily maximum temperature subtract a base temperature. And the base temperature, we varied it from 20 to 36 degrees because we wanted to see, was there a particular temperature that influenced isoflavone concentration more than others? Cold stress days, on the other hand, we took the base temperature and we put it first and then subtracted the daily mean temperature. And the reason we did this was we wanted to avoid a lot of negative numbers. So you have to remember that the greater the cold stress day, the more, the colder the period was during the growth stage interval. And again, we varied the base temperature from 5 to 20. So using weather and phenology, we calculated the heat stress day and cold stress day for all of the cultivars, for all of these growth stage intervals. Because we measured phenology, we were able to go back and develop these different growth stage intervals. For example, seeding to emergence, emergence to V3, and so on and so forth. We could then combine growth stage intervals to make bigger intervals and combine those again to make even larger ones. So we had 21 different growth stage intervals at the end. And we could even go, you know, from seed right to maturity. So we then took the means from the 14 cultivars for heat stress days and cold stress days and these isoflavones per growth stage interval. And we did a lot of, that'll teach me to talk with my hands, we did a lot of correlations between the heat stress day, cold stress day, and the isoflavone. And we said that the highest significant correlation coefficient, it was identified as the most predictive climate parameter or the climate parameter that caused the most change in isoflavone concentration. So looking at first at heat stress on isoflavone concentration, we found no significant linear correlation between heat stress and daidzine at any of the growth stage intervals that we looked at. On a cultivar basis, only one out of the 14 cultivars showed any significant correlation with heat stress days. Genistein concentration was negatively correlated with heat stress days greater than 28 degrees C during seed development. That's R5 to R8. I know there's a little bit of ripening that's going on in here, but I'm going to call this seed development. And on a cultivar basis, 7 out of the 14 cultivars showed this significant linear correlation with heat stress days. Total isoflavone concentration, which is the product of genistein and daidzine and glycine, was negatively correlated with heat stress days during seed development. And on a cultivar basis, only 4 out of the 14 cultivars showed this relationship. Now the R squares are 0.4 and 0.38, and as heat stress increases, isoflavone concentration decreases. So this supports the work of predecessors, Tsukamoto and others, who have shown that heat stress during reproduction does influence isoflavone concentration. But the reduction in isoflavone concentration was not universal amongst the cultivars that we tested. Now looking at cold stress and isoflavone concentration, we found that seed daidzine concentration correlated with cold stress days less than 20 degrees during seedling emergence, and that 12 out of 14 cultivars showed this effect. So this is from as soon as we put the seed in the ground to just as it emerges, this affects the seed at maturity, the isoflavone concentration. And this is daidzine. We can see that the colder it gets, the higher the daidzine concentration is in the seed at the end of the growing season. Same with genistein. From seeding to emergence, temperatures less than 15 degrees correlated with an increase in genistein concentration, and their product total isoflavone concentration is the same. And the R-squares are pretty good, 78%, 73%, and 79%. And looking at the cultivars, it's almost universal. 14 out of 14 cultivars, 14 out of 14 demonstrated this, and 12 out of 14 demonstrated this for daidzine. So in conclusion, plant breeding for yield has resulted in short season cultivars with higher daidzine and genistein concentration in our short season environment. Daidzine was not correlated with heat stress days during seed development, but heat stress days greater than 28 degrees C from R5 to R8 did result in a reduction in genistein concentration with an R-square of 0.4 and total isoflavone concentration with an R-square of 0.38. Daidzine, genistein, and total isoflavone concentration in the mature seed are affected by cold stress temperatures during seedling emergence. That's as soon as you put the seed in the ground until just after the cotyledons are unfolded. Cold stress days less than 20 degrees resulted in 78% of the variation that we found in daidzine concentration. Cold stress days less than 15 resulted in 73% of the genistein, and their product, total isoflavone concentration, cold stress days less than 17 resulted in 79% of the variation in total isoflavone concentration. So where are we going from here? Well, we're going to concentrate on the influence of temperature during emergence on isoflavone concentration in the plant and the seed. I think we can see that predictive models can be developed from some of those cold stress regressions that we did. We could perhaps expand that into something the producer could use. It's quite easy to monitor minimum temperature and maximum temperature. We could look at the accumulation of minimum temperature from seed to emergence, and from there somehow predict isoflavone concentration. And finally, we might even look at potential mechanisms. Why is the plant influenced at the emergence stage? Why does that influence the isoflavone concentration at the mature stage? And I put this slide in here to show you that by this time, the environment has dictated what the isoflavone concentration is going to be in the final at maturity in the seeds. Thanks, and I'll entertain any questions. No, they weren't, and we did look at that. I looked at the effect of year on isoflavone concentration, and there was no association. We analyzed them all at the same time.
Oh, so some of them were 12.
Some of them were really old, yes. And we were concerned about that. Okay, thank you.